Hello, my name is Kate Cooper. I'm Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute of Leadership and Management. Welcome to this podcast, which is one in a series of five podcasts focusing on being a great colleague. The Institute of Leadership and Management recognises great leadership as being multidimensional. We identify five dimensions: authenticity, vision, achievement, ownership and collaboration. We've further broken down those five dimensions into 49 components, which enables us to organise our content, but also helps individuals access the leadership support that is immediately relevant to them. The components I will be talking about in this podcast is appreciating diversity, part of the dimension of collaboration, because collaborative leadership is inclusive and sensitive to the needs of others. I'll be focusing on three particular aspects: being inclusive, being socially sensitive, and unconscious bias. I'll first consider what we mean by diversity and inclusivity. Often these terms are used interchangeably, but they mean quite different things. Diversity is exactly that. How diverse is your workforce? How well represented are you of different groups of the customers that you serve? Do your employees, for example, recognise that? Do you have diverse talents, perspectives within your organisation? Too often, diversity is seen in terms of perhaps quotas or compliance. It's not about inclusivity. So diversity is a recognition of who we need to invite, and inclusivity is making sure the culture of the organisation is a welcome one. In the UK, we recognise in law certain protected characteristics, and people who are discriminated against because of being a member of a group of those with the protected characteristics have legal recourse. Discrimination exists in many forms. We can directly discriminate against somebody, but then there's indirect discrimination where perhaps trying to treat everybody the same, we discriminate against a particular group. Talking about diversity, talking about discrimination and protected characteristics, I think makes us lose sight of what we're really trying to achieve, which is places where everybody is happy to work. We did some research recently on organisational values, and the most popular value was that of respect. If we look at the meaning of respect, it is twofold. It means to hold somebody in high regard, and it also means to take account of their feelings. If we were genuinely respecting everybody in our organisation and outside in supply chains, our customers, would we need to be talking about inclusivity? Would it not actually just be the way we were? We know organisations are not all inclusive places, so it's probably worth thinking about why that might be. On the whole, we like people like us. When we meet new people, we look for connections. Almost instinctively, we are drawn to non-diverse groups. People trying to champion diversity, trying to get more inclusivity in their organisations might well meet resistance from people who are not sharing that ambition, that desire. And we also find that some people who have protected characteristics feel they need to minimise them or even hide them in order to fit in. And as well as all of that, we have conscious and unconscious biases that I'll be talking about in a few minutes, which persist because if not challenged, if not altered and changed, then they'll continue with behaviours in organisations that are not inclusive and nobody actually taking responsibility for that, because by the very nature of unconscious bias, we don't know it's happening. So how do you go about building inclusive organisations? Well, it starts, of course, with recruitment. Are we reaching the people that we want to reach? Are we ensuring that our talent pool is as wide as it can possibly be? And then when people have joined our organisation, are we making them welcome, inclusive, and able to access all promotion opportunities, training and development opportunities? Are they genuinely available for everybody? Do we look at our teams and think about composition? Certainly, but who gets the high profile jobs? Who gets sent on the special projects? Do we make sure that when we have high profile opportunities that we are being equitable and fair in how we allocate them. Do people get left out? Why do they get left out? It's often quite easy when people don't join in organisations, especially social activities, to blame them for not being included. But we have to be much more exacting and demanding of ourselves to think, well, why doesn't somebody come along? Why have we got lower incidence of certain groups at certain levels in the organisation? And to recognise that that responsibility isn't owned by the individual. If you don't have enough women in senior positions, for example, in your organisation, it is not the fault of women in the organisation. It is the fault of the organisation, how they go about recruiting and promoting. Daniel Goleman published a book in the 1990s where he highlighted the importance of emotional intelligence at work. And two of those components of emotional intelligence, which I'm sure everybody's heard about, were social awareness and relationship management. And he developed these further into social intelligence. And what social intelligence is about being obviously socially sensitive, but it's picking up on other people's emotions and working out what's really going on there. Why are these emotions becoming manifest? Appreciating that people have a different perspective. There's always another way of looking at a problem, a situation, an event. And that your role in events and situations is significant, and your behaviour impacts others, provokes emotions in them that you might not have intended to at all. And it's important to explore what your actions are provoking. And I use that word deliberately in others. Seeking to build rapport. I've already mentioned how we seek out other people like us and we like to make connections. But rapport is a step further than that. It's wanting to understand where that person is coming from and indeed wanting them to understand you. So in order to make that happen, you have to manage the way you interact with people. And this shouldn't be a set of questions and making people feel that they're being interrogated, but a genuine need to ask a question, listen to the answer, ask a further question. So you're building rapport because of your genuine interest in the people that you're talking to and how they are feeling in the moment of that conversation. And to always try and see any interaction, any conversation as something that has a benefit to both parties. I mentioned unconscious bias a couple of times, and we hear quite a lot about it. A lot of companies have invested in unconscious bias training. But the problem, I suppose, with unconscious bias is that it happens automatically. And because it's outside of our control, because it's unconscious, it is quite difficult to be able to correct it, if you like. But nevertheless, being aware that we have unconscious biases is absolutely a first step towards doing something about it. So what might we do in order to explore unconscious bias? There are actually a lot of questionnaires on the internet, freely available because it's contributing to people's research, where they can explore unconscious bias, answer a lot of questions and get a really detailed report back showing your particular areas of unconscious bias. And I actually think that's a brilliant starting point. To look at decisions that are made in the organisation, why they're made, going back to those high profile opportunities, for example, I was talking about earlier, keep a record of the decisions. Might be just for you. Quick notes about how a decision was reached at that seemed to arrive at a conclusion where a more privileged individual was given an opportunity where it could have gone to somebody else. To reduce your own unconscious biases, the best way is to talk to people who are different from you. And once we start to form relationships, once we build that rapport, the differences disappear and the similarities remain. So it's actively seeking out different people to have conversations with, different things to read, different channels on radio and television, YouTube. Look at things that you wouldn't normally look at. And that challenges you. And it's also, of course, very interesting at the same time. Finally, there is quite a lot of talk about the business case for diversity and inclusivity, but I think perhaps that's really the wrong way of looking at it, because once you start suggesting that there is a business case for including people in certain activities, you're losing sight of the fact that actually there's a moral imperative for you to include them in the first place. So I think both cases need to be progressed. Yes, strong arguments for innovation and delivering on the bottom line to be better representative of our customers and therefore do a better job. But at the same time, a really inclusive organisation is one where we wouldn't be questioning diversity. It wouldn't be a problem. We wouldn't be talking about it because every layer of the organisation, every project group, every department would reflect the diversity and the richness of the society in which we're operating. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Please do go onto our website, www.institutelm.com, and look at our other resources on there.